Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wags are ready to bring you the night in sports. So pull up a stool, grab a drink, and let's get toasted.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome into the Toasted Tavern. I am your host, Michael Wags, Wag Connect, alongside Scott Tobin, who's back from his baseball duties. And we've got Tom Franklin back again with us because you know what? The NHL just does not like to go away in the summer. And it's hot here in St. Louis, but I tell you what, damn, is it cold right now with the NHL going on. We've got the entry draft going on right now. Plenty of trades to talk about, including when the Blues made that's got Tom giddier than a schoolgirl. And we're also going to talk a little bit about college football transitioning to something a little bit different, but maybe quite expected. So, gentlemen, first off, how are you doing tonight? It's been another hot, scorching day here in St. Louis. But like I said, lots of great sports action going on. Scott, man, how are you doing right now?
I'm doing all right, man. Got a little bit of rest today, which was good after some long nights at Busch Stadium, but it was worth it. The Cardinals are starting to roll a little bit, fellas.
That they are. And the Blues are doing their own part about getting rolling as well. Tom, man, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, doing pretty good. Just following all the happenings. Like, you know, even when I'm sleeping, things happen. You know, I take afternoon naps because I work ungodly hours. But, yeah, when I woke up and, you know, kind of rubbed the sleep out of my eyes, I was not expecting Pavel Buchnevich to be the newest St. Louis Blue from the New York Rangers. But here we are, and as the sign says behind me, Doug Armstrong, I think, is now wanted for murdering Chris Drury. He claims another GM's life from the Northeast.
We keep wondering when the other shoe's going to drop on that, because he's already fleeced, what, two or three Eastern Conference general managers, and now we got another one over in New York. What's it going to take to maybe get somebody else in here? Who knows? And just so you know, Tim G-Man tweeted me earlier today, messaged me, he goes, Tom Tech picked a hell of a time to sleep. And yeah, it seems like every time you go to sleep, something is happening. So, you know, maybe we got to plan these things a little bit. You know, you sleep and one of us is available to just hit that breaking news.
Well, unfortunately, they disconnected my emergency red line to Doug Armstrong's phone, so he can't clue me in on when these things are going to happen. So, darn the luck. Although he did kind of drop a little interesting mic drop. He did a presser this afternoon about the Buchnevich deal, and then he said at the very end, probably the most interesting thing he said in the whole conference, stay tuned. So he literally did a mic drop. So it sounds like more might be coming, or maybe he was just screwing with us. That's, you know, when I pull off a trade like that, I'm not a GM, but if I pull off a trade like that, I'm feeling a little cocky afterwards. So, and he has every right to be, because Buchnevich is a heck of a pickup.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about him, because he's a young guy. He was with the Rangers. He's a restricted free agent with arbitration rights. The Blues are already working on a deal with him right now. 20 goals in 54 games this year. The kid's been kind of a revelation up in New York, one of their better scorers. So why is the decision to move on from him even a question? And yet you're getting Sammy Blais. Yeah, a big guy, 1 year left on his deal, $1.5 million. Maybe the Rangers want to go a little bit bigger, but I mean, you're giving away a guy that scored double digit goals in the last couple seasons.
He's a restricted free agent, and I'm sure he's going to command, you know, a pretty penny, because this guy was almost a point per game player this past season. 54 games played, 20 goals in 54 games, 28 assists. He's a plus 12. He plays a good two-way game. He was a desirable guy. The issue for the Rangers is that they have, like, all the wingers. Like, they are just absolutely overloaded with wingers. I mean, of course, we all know about Artemi Panarin, their first-round picks from the past couple of years, Kaapo Kakko and Alexis Lafreniere. You're not going to put them in the third and fourth lines, you know. So there just literally was no more room on the Rangers for Buchnevich. It was a case of the Rangers just having a wealth of talent. And, you know, for them, they get Sammy Blais, who, you know, they probably needed a little bottom six grit. That is something that I kind of heard was an issue for the Rangers, was that they were a little soft last year. And of course, as we all know, Blais is a forechecking, heat-seeking missile. So, you know, he'll be missed in that regard here. I mean, Blais definitely had his fans here. but he kind of was what he was, I think, over time. And he was never going to be a top six forward. You know, he's an energy guy. He's a glue guy. And, you know, unfortunately, players like him, you can find anywhere. Like, you know, I mean, like literally Arizona just acquired two of those guys today from Vancouver, and Beagle and Roussel. So it just in this for nothing, essentially. So, you know, that was a factor. And then, of course, they had a second round pick. I mean, the Rangers are still a team that's they're still on the upswing. They're not there yet, per se, but they get to add more young assets. And for them, that was probably very desirable. But again, I think Armstrong pulled off a very good. I mean, I don't think the Rangers are going to be like, you know, lying in a pool of their own blood like the Sabres were with the O'Reilly trade. But they might rue this because Buchnevich, he's only 25. Well, I think he's 26 now.
Yeah.
And he's got a long career ahead of him. And if he's anything like he was this past season, he's going to be on that top line for the Blues for years to come. And yes, he is a top line level guy.
Well, and you're trading one Russian for another because you talk about Doug Armstrong's comments about stay tuned. You know, Vladimir Tarasenko is a guy that's potentially on the outs. But we'll talk about that in just a second. I want to touch with Scott real quick on this. Over the last couple of years, you know, we've kind of gone back and forth with Mozeliak and Armstrong about who was the better GM in St. Louis. Obviously, Doug went out, got Ryan O'Reilly. They ended up going to the Cup and winning it. Then all of a sudden, you know, Mozeliak pulls off the Goldschmidt deal and then the Nolan Arenado deal. And yes, not a lot's gone on around that, but those are two pretty big moves. And we thought maybe the pendulum might have been swinging back to Mozeliak. Now you get this deal by Armstrong to bring in a guy of that caliber and who's going to probably make a huge impact. You know, did Armstrong ever really relinquish that GM of St. Louis title? Or is this setting up for Mozeliak to sit there and go, all right, now it's up on me. I got to improve the Cardinals. I mean, where do we sit on that as far as the status of the GMs here in St. Louis?
It's funny that you asked me that because I was actually thinking about that today. It was like, you know, the timing of this today, a week before the trade deadline in Major League Baseball with the Cardinals starting to play better, this all of a sudden puts even more pressure on Mo to make a move. You know, when you see the Blues pull a trade like this, and like I said, the Cardinals are playing to the point where they were putting pressure on him anyway. So, yeah, I think it's time for Mo to step up, or again, Army takes that big leap ahead of him again as being the GM of St. Louis, like you said.
Yeah, it's going to put a lot of pressure on him. And we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the trades that have gone down today, but we are in the middle of the NHL injury draft, and the Blues did just make their selection. Center Zachary Bolduc was the pick for the Blues at what's technically number 17, but actually the 16th pick of the draft because Arizona forfeited the 11th pick this year. We don't see that a whole lot. But Tom, give us a little bit of insight into this young kid that the Blues just drafted.
Well, I'm not like a draft expert like our friend Gabe Foley is. We might have on this weekend, you know, on Toasted Blues to talk about this pick a little bit. But Zachary Bolduc, you know, for most of what I'm seeing may have been a little off the radar for the Blues. I mean, in terms of who was available at that time. But we saw them do that last year with Jake Neighbors as well. When the Blues like a guy, I think they don't really let rankings, you know, get too much into the swing of it. And also, you know, the OHL didn't play this year. It was kind of a weird year for the juniors. So, like, what really is a ranking at this point? I mean, because you don't have a lot of tape in the past, you know, 16 months on these players. But Bolduc is he played for Rimouski in the QMJHL. Compares his game to an Evgeny Kuznetsov type of a style, where you know, very slick forward for the Washington Capitals, and hopefully, unlike Kuznetsov, hopefully Bolduc doesn't have a cocaine problem. But regardless, Bolduc is kind of described a little bit as a boomer bust type. He's got some very high end skills on offense. He's a good skater. You know, could improve a little bit there, but he's already considered, you know, very good there. He is, he got a good wrist shot, slap shot, snap shot. He's a proven shooter. He's accurate, good power, wrist shot and snap shot also have a decent release. There's a lot to like about Zachary Bolduc. He's also a center, which means, you know, usually for prospects, if you're a center, you have that ability, if it doesn't work out, to go to the left or right wings. It's a lot easier to make a center a winger than a winger a center. So so that was probably but they are saying, the Blues, by the way, are saying that he is a center at this point. So keep that in mind. But he's not exactly, we were talking about Mike Hoffman in his own end and having some defensive issues. Boldic does not have a reputation for being a defensive player. That's kind of a void in his game a little bit. And his hockey IQ could be a little bit better. He's a guy that's probably going to need a little bit of work, over time, but the untapped potential is there. And he could be a very exciting player going forward in the future. And I thought a lot of people thought the Blues were going to go defense. I think they needed a forward because their forward cupboard is pretty bare in terms of prospects. And this was from this first impression, because they literally just made the pick. It looks like a pretty good pick.
Well, and they said the same thing about Jake Neighbors last year too. Another guy that was kind of off the board, like you said, going to need a little work, a little time in the minors. So people have to remember, outside of the top maybe three or four picks, a lot of these kids are not going to see an NHL ice rink in 5-6 years. Probably they've got a lot of time to develop, and the Blues feel like, especially with the trade they made today, that they're probably set for the next couple of years. So there's no point in really drafting a guy unless he just falls to you. You're not going to draft a guy that's necessarily going to take one of those top 12 spots or top six spots, because you've already got people lined up and ready to play in that spot. Now, a guy like Scotty Perunovic that they brought in a couple years ago is a guy that maybe that was fast-tracked and is going to be with this team this year. So seeing how they picked this guy around 17, it makes sense that he's going to need some development. And, yeah, you could probably reach just a little bit. I mean, think back, how many years ago? This is right about the point that they took Vladimir Tarasenko. And yep. Tarasenko was another guy that, not that he needed work, but he was a Russian player. And there was the question marks around him if he would even come to America, which in everything he said, it was, yes, I'm coming to America. But that's what allowed him to drop as well. And the Blues could take a little bit of a risk. And that's the exact same spot that they're in this year as they were last year. They've got the ability to kind of take a bit of a risk and restock the cupboard, but it doesn't have to be an immediate impact.
No, it doesn't. I mean, they have some time with Bolduc and some of their other prospects. I mean, because they are definitely still going to be in a mode where they are looking to win now. They have a Stanley Cup window, which I think is still open, despite, kind of the turmoil that has, kind of happened in the last couple of years. Also, there is talks that maybe, yesterday at his press conference, Doug Armstrong did not close the door on Tarasenko in St. Louis. He kind of said that, Tarasenko needs to prepare for being a St. Louis Blue this coming season, which also kind of, may have a little bit of an undercurrent there in that, hey, Vlad, do everything you can to make yourself attractive to other teams as well by not being sulky and being a horse's ass about this whole thing. So what will happen between now and the next couple weeks is anyone's guess. I definitely did not have Buchnevich on my forecast for potential, Blues going forward. That another out of the blue Doug Armstrong deal, Wags. I mean, he tends to do this where I think we kind of lost hope on a Ryan O'Reilly trade. It seemed like that kind of fizzled, but then all of a sudden, bam, they make the trade. Braden Schenn, I didn't even know he was available and for trade period when they made that. And then, they get him for Laterra and two first rounders. I mean, this is Doug Armstrong, vintage Doug Armstrong here. And depending on what Buchnevich gets, because he is a restricted free agent, he does have arbitration rights, but the kind of, if just listening to Armstrong today and also reading what Buchnevich's agent was saying to Jeremy Rutherford, I got to think that there's some confidence they can get a long-term deal done. And if it's an eight-year deal, I mean, again, Buchnevich is only 26, so he should be able to play out that contract and play it out pretty well. And it may be in the Blues' interest to do that because, if he goes to arbitration, he has a good year, maybe he builds off that arbitration contract that he gets. But if you sign him now to that eight-year deal, maybe you can get a little bit of a break on that average annual value that Buchnevich will get.
Yeah, and Scott, we see that all the time in baseball is, a lot of these kids on their rookie deals, the team will end up buying out a couple of their, free years, their arbitration eligible years. And in this case, do you think that makes sense for the Blues to go that route?
It very well could. It very well could. It might be a really smart move to make. And, like you said, we see that happen in all sports. You see the same thing happen in the NFL quite often. Teams will step up and buy out guys you know, that last year of their rookie deal. So it happens in all sports. And a lot of times it makes good sense for a team to go ahead and do that and extend it and buy out those last couple of years and kind of work it out that way. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if we see that happen.
And like Tom said, Doug Armstrong didn't close the door on Vladimir Tarasenko coming back. You've got another Russian that has just come into the St. Louis Blues. And yes, he's going to add money to that team salary cap. And you're going to lose a lot over the next couple of years anyway. So it may not hurt it that bad to keep a Vladimir Tarasenko on here. But in your mind, Scott, and then Tom after that, do you think this move was made with a bit of an eye of maybe appeasing Vladimir Tarasenko and saying, hey, look, we know that you kind of wanted to leave, but now we're bringing in another guy, countryman, young kid, another guy maybe you can help mentor and grow in the game. Is that something that could appease Vladimir Tarasenko and allow him to stay with the Blues and give him a bit of a leadership position that's not the captaincy that he was a little upset about, but gives him some stake in this team going forward?
I think that's quite possible. And go ahead, Scott.
No, you're good, Tom. Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I don't know that I would make this trade with that necessarily really in mind, because if Vladdy's decided that he doesn't want to be here, I'm not sure that bringing somebody else in is going to make a difference. You know, we've heard rumors that he's not happy with the medical staff. He's not happy with the coaching staff. We know he's not happy about not being made the captain. You know, there's a lot of stuff there, so I'm not sure one player move is going to mend fences there.
Yeah.
And, you know, and again, Army can say all he wants that, oh, we're leaving the door open. You know, Vladdy may have to think about coming in. That doesn't mean that Vladimir Tarasenko is going to come to training camp and be happy that he's blue and be the best little soldier in that locker room if he has to come back here and really doesn't want to.
Well, remember, this is, you know, as I call it, bullshit season for NHL GMs, where you can't believe a single thing a GM in the NHL really says, because a lot of it could be just smokescreen. A lot of it could be just, you know, conjecture and just meant to kind of steer you away from the actual reality of what's going on. I don't know if Buchnevich and Tarasenko have a relationship. I don't know if they've played together. I mean, maybe a little bit for Team Russia. I don't know if Buchnevich is the type of player that you go out to maybe satiate a guy like Vladimir Tarasenko, because Buchnevich is a very good player. I wouldn't call him a superstar. I mean, but he's a very good player. I would say he's probably a little bit of an upgrade over Jaden Schwartz, if I'm being honest, just based on the Jaden Schwartz that we have seen the last couple of seasons. Maybe Schwartz goes somewhere else and lights it up and makes us all look dumb. But you can't count on that, you know, with Jaden Schwartz. Whereas with Buchnevich, you know, he was probably the New York Rangers' best player for the first half of this past season. He was really good. And not only that, but, you know, we keep talking about Craig Berube-type players. Buchnevich plays a two-way game. He's very responsible in his own end. He can probably play on the penalty kill, you know, for the Blues. He is that level of a talent. And I just think this is just a fantastic move, but I don't know how Vladimir Tarasenko would view it or if he cares at this point.
And 5v5, Buchnevich was the second best player behind Artemi Panarin on the New York Rangers. So you're essentially, like I said, getting the Rangers' second best player from last year, and you're trading a guy in Sammy Blais who's had opportunities and had flashes, but never really kind of got it going full term. You know, Jordan Kyrou has been a guy that had big time flashes last year. He did go away a little bit, but then he was able to rebound and continue on. He always played a good game. Sammy Blais, not so much. You look at a guy like Zach Sanford, another guy that, you know, Blues fans are clamoring for Doug Armstrong to get rid of. You know, is that the next thing? Are we going to send Sanford in a yo-yo to like Ottawa for Brady Tkachuk?
I think Sanford, if he could be considered an asset in a trade, I think Armstrong would probably consider it. I mean, there's one thing for Berube to continue to have faith in Sanford and continue to play him, but you know, if Armstrong doesn't have faith in Sanford, he'll move on. We don't know where Armstrong truly stands on him, though. It's quite possible Sanford comes back and is the third line left winger for next year, which will make all the Blues fans very happy. By the way, can we all agree that of all the NHL trades that were that happened today, the Buchnevich deal probably made the most sense?
Oh, yeah.
Out of all of them, because you had Chicago getting Seth Jones for Adam Bockvist, who was a former first-round pick. the first and second rounder this weekend and the first in 2022. I don't know if Chicago watched Seth Jones last year at all, but he was terrible. He was not the Seth Jones of old, and to me, the juice just was not worth the squeeze. But the worst thing of it all, you know, Wags and actually Scott as well. I mean, we've seen the Blackhawks in the last decade have these big contracts that hurt their ability to build a roster, and you know, and now it's got them kind of in a middling, you know, position in the central middle to low, you know, part of the division. So they clear out Dustin Keith. I think Seabrook is. I think that contract might be off the books now. He just flat out retired. So you're starting to see them get relief. And what does Chicago do with that relief? They go out and get one of the most overrated defensemen in the NHL in Seth Jones. And you know what? I'm happy with that. I'm here for that.
Same here.
Yeah, I'm going to enjoy seeing Blackhawks fans booing Seth Jones in a couple of years because he is an anchor that is dragging that defense down.
Well, like you said, they traded Duncan Keith away to get out of an Albatross contract. And yeah, Seth Jones is a bit younger, but you're going to have the same situation in about 4 or 5 years when he gets to Duncan Keith's age that he is now, and you're going to still have term left on that deal. So, I mean, they've been after Seth Jones the entire offseason. I mean, I think they were scouting him during the trade deadline this past season. So, like, Seth Jones was Chicago's guy. They were going to find a way to get him at some point and then to turn around and give that 8-year deal. It's absolutely shocking to me. Huge misstep by the Blackhawks.
Incredible. And you would have thought that they would have learned from history, and not just history, but like history a few hours earlier when Arizona traded OEL and Garland to Vancouver. Now, that should be the blueprint for what it takes to get rid of a bad defensive contract, because actually it's going to work out pretty well for Arizona after this season. They got Jay Beagle, the corpse of Louis Erickson, Antoine Roussel, and the 9th overall pick. But to get rid of Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who, you know, has a bad contract, he had a really bad year. He looks like that's going to be an absolute anchor for a team. Arizona did pretty well to get out of that, but they had to get rid of Connor Garland in that deal, a young, high effort forward that I think any NHL team would love to have. Clearly Vancouver was loving that because they're willing to take OEL in that deal in exchange for giving Arizona their trash. And Chicago's going to be in that same situation a few years later when their next hot prospect comes up, but then they have to package him with Seth Jones just to get rid of that contract. I mean, it's just these NHL teams do not learn from history.
They really don't. They really don't. And it's not like, you know, Major League Baseball with unlimited salaries. Yes, you have the luxury cap and all of that, the luxury tax. It's amazing. And that's why when you look at Doug Armstrong and you go, okay, he hasn't necessarily given out terrible contracts as of late. At the beginning of his tenure here in St. Louis, he almost had to give out bad contracts in order to field a competitive team. But just everything in recent memory has been, okay, good deal, good deal, good deal, something you can get out of. And it goes back to the whole Pietrangelo thing from last year. He didn't want to give him a no-movement clause because what's that going to do? It hamstrings the team. And you can hamstring a team in multiple ways, with the salary, with the term, with your no-trade/no-movement clauses. I mean, there's different things that you can put in a contract that will hurt your trade value going forward. And that's what some of these other teams are doing, where Doug Armstrong is not. And I tell you what, Vancouver's going to be scary next year. You know, getting a guy like Connor Garland to go along with those guys up there. And yes, you can sit there and say OEL is going to be an anchor, but if you put him on the third pairing defensive group, that might be exactly where, it'll be a high priced third pair, but that's going to be a pretty decent defensive core up there as well.
Yeah, Vancouver had an off year this past year, and clearly this is GM Jim Benning saying, okay, that's not going to happen again. That was a burp. You know, that's not where this organization is going. So, yeah, I think he was under pressure to make a big splashy move like that. Speaking of overpaid defensemen, Sabres did well dealing Rasmus Ristolainen to Philly today for a first, second, and young defenseman Robert Hag. So, 3 overpriced defensemen changing hands today. You just love, and those three probably have the worst defense contracts in the NHL. NHL. So what a day. But a little thing, a little bit on Tarasenko. I just saw a tweet roll by. Where did it go? My Twitter is like the Matrix tonight because of the draft is going on. So it's like hard to like, you know, pin a tweet down. David Pagnotta from the fourth period tweeted out tonight that there may be some progress on an eventual Vladimir Tarasenko trade out of St. Louis. Not sure on timing, but talks have certainly picked up this afternoon, which may have necessitated Rutherford coming out and saying that as far as he knows, Tarasenko has not been asked to waive his no trade. So it's all happening today.
It really is. And Scott, to kind of bring you back into this, because I know hockey is kind of Tom and I's like bread and butter, but you know, you've watched Vladimir Tarasenko with this team for so long and you know what he's meant to St. Louis. You know, what's it going to be like when this deal actually does come to fruition and the Blues do end up trading a guy like Vlad and he's in a different uniform next year?
You know what? I don't think it's going to be as big of a deal for fans now as it would have been a couple of years ago, just because with all the injuries, and he hasn't been the same Vladdy. You know, a lot of fans have kind of, and you kind of see it. There's a lot of fans that are just kind of ho-hum about this whole thing because he hasn't been that impact superstar player for a couple of years now. And there's been a lot of rumblings about him needing to leave St. Louis for the last couple of years that maybe it was time to move on. So I don't think it's going to have as big of an impact on fans as it would have, say, 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, and I kind of want to get to this because this kind of just went down. One of those trades in the NHL that make you go, huh, okay. So you've got Edmonton sitting at number 20. And what does Edmonton kind of need? I mean, if you were the Oilers, what do you need?
Their defense is a swinging saloon door, so I would say that.
Okay, so they traded their pick with Minnesota. Minnesota jumped up a couple of spots, and I'm looking at this right now, and it looks like Jesper Wallstedt is the pick in Minnesota. How does Edmonton pass on that?
I have no – I don't know what Edmonton is doing anymore. Like seriously, it just – they have all this talent, and you just wonder why it hasn't materialized and why they keep getting, you know, they got embarrassed in the first round this year. Now I will say in Wallstedt's defense, you know, who was the 20th overall pick this year by Minnesota, that would have been a good pick for Edmonton because, you know, their goaltending is also, you know, not exactly elite. They just re-signed Mike Smith, who is
39,
allegedly. I don't know. I think he may have, you know, lied on his birth certificate on that because he looks like he's every bit of 48. But regardless, they signed him to a 2-year deal. They still have Mikko Koskinen at $4.5 million because that was like that was the previous GM's kind of like FU to Edmonton because like I think he Koskinen signed that deal and then like a couple hours later the GM was fired. So yep, that's how great that contract is. But yeah, I mean, so you would think that Edmonton would want a young goaltender to groom, but then they deal their pick to get one, and I don't know. LOL Edmonton at this point. I don't know.
I'm sorry, Edmonton fans. That's about all I got to say. One final thing in the NHL before we move on, because we got to talk about this Cardinals team that's streaking at the moment, although maybe not. We'll find out. Taylor Hall signed an extension with Boston. 4 years, annual cap hit of $6 million. Kind of rebounded in Boston last year. 8 goals, 6 assists in 16 games. He's a guy that Blues fans kind of wanted here in St. Louis. Not sure if he would actually have fit on this team and with Craig Berube's style. But what do you think about Taylor Hall re-upping in Boston? And is Boston still a threat, especially now that they may not have either of their previous starting goaltenders?
I feel hockey is one of those sports where there are just players that do better in certain schemes or under certain coaches or in certain situations. It seems like a very situational game. And I know Taylor Hall has not had the best run of it the last couple of years, but he did seem to spring back to life in Boston. He when he was traded at the deadline, he basically was Boston or bust from all accounts. He wanted to be a Boston Bruin. He just had a good feeling about it. And when you're you're a star left winger in this league and you're having a good feeling about, you know, where you are, you know, you can do amazing things. And Taylor Hall, eight goals, six assists in 16 games. They were very happy with him in Boston, and for good reason. He really rebounded his play. $6 million per, that's not too bad. 4 years, that's not too bad. Very reasonable, and it kind of makes you, and that's another thing, another winger that is off the market, you know, before free agency even opens next Wednesday. If you're thinking about, you know, Tarasenko and his future, you've had Taylor Hall is off the board. Zach Hyman's going to Edmonton. You have Yanni Gourde, who became a member of the Seattle Kraken. I mean, Landeskog's still out there. Please sign him, Doug Armstrong, please. But, you know, you have some wingers that would be potential targets for teams this offseason flying off the board. That's going to open up the Vladimir Tarasenko trade market should they still pursue that path. And that may be kind of leading to some of the activity that's going on with him today.
So one more thing before we get on. I want both just quick fire responses from both of you on this.
Okay.
You said free agency opens up on Wednesday. Tarasenko is no longer a St. Louis Blue by the time free agency opens on Wednesday. Yes or no?
Yes.
No.
Okay. So two differing opinions. We'll find out how that plays out over the next couple of days. So, all right, let's jump over to Major League Baseball, because the Cardinals are still an enigma. The big win on Monday night, the epic collapse on Tuesday night. A couple of big wins Wednesday and Thursday. One of them almost another epic collapse in the ninth inning as well. But they take 3 of 4 from the Cubs after taking 2 of 3 from the Giants. You know, they're kind of pushing to get back into this race. They head into Cincinnati tonight. They jump out to a 1-0 lead. They fall behind 2-1. They tie it up at 2, fall behind 3-2, go up 5-3. In the bottom of the seventh, Ryan Helsley gives up 2 runs, and it's now a 5-5 game here in the bottom of the eighth as the Reds bat with 2 on and 1 out. What is up with this team, Scott? I mean, they look halfway decent at home against Chicago. And then, yes, I know Cincinnati is an absolute barn box or bandbox when it comes to hitting. But, like, what is going on with this team right now?
Well, you have a guy in Wade LeBlanc start tonight who's a bullpen pitcher who went 4 innings. So that taxes your pitching staff. To say they're an enigma is not really fair, because if they win tonight, it's 9 out of 13 games that they've won, you know, and they're also on the verge of picking up 4 games in a week in the standings. So to say that they're an enigma or not really playing well would not really be fair to this ball club in any way, shape, or form. Their pitching's been better too, for the most part, other than that ninth inning. When you look at their starting ERA for the last 2 weeks is second best ERA in baseball. They're playing Gold Glove caliber defense, and they're starting to hit. So, yeah, they had a bad game against the Cubs, which happens every once in a while in that ninth inning, and it was a half of an inning. Other than that, they've played really good baseball. Tonight's one of those games, like you said, they're playing in Cincinnati where you knew it was going to go back and forth. And then when you have a guy like LeBlanc who has 85 pitches through 4 innings, you know, it's going to be a tough game. So, you know, but they're definitely playing better. I mean, you can see it. You can, you know, I watched this team now for the last couple of weeks at home. You know, and you can see it in the ball club. They're playing better baseball than they've played all season. You know, and they're making a run. You know, we talked about it at the ballpark the other day. You know, if you're John Mozeliak and you're Bill DeWitt and you're looking at this ball club and you look at what they've done the last couple of weeks for the most part, and then you look around the National League, you have to almost be thinking, if this team would win 2 out of 3 this weekend and Milwaukee loses a couple and they get to 6 or 5 out, or, you know, by next week and by the trade deadline, if they're within 5 games, you have to go get something, because you look around the National League and it's winnable. You know, everybody talks about the Dodgers and the Padres. Dodgers and Padres aren't playing very well. The Dodgers have all kinds of injuries. Padres are talking about blowing up that team. They're talking about they're talking about moving Eric Hosmer. They're talking about moving Tommy Pham. They're talking about going out and getting 2 or 3 starting pitch. I mean, they're not happy with that team in San Diego. They're talking about making wholesale changes like they did at the All-Star break last year. So, I mean, if the Cardinals, like I said, if they play decent this next week and they get themselves within 4 or 5 games, I think you have to make a trade, because I think the National League's winnable.
I 100% agree. I mean, going into this season, I was of the same mindset. It's like Dodgers, Padres, those teams are going to – possibly run away with it. You don't really know what you're getting out of the East. You know, maybe the Mets are good. Maybe the Braves are able to put things together. Maybe the Nationals rebound. Who knows? But now you look at it and you're right. This is a very, very winnable league. And we don't even have our guys back that we need back. Jack Flaherty is still going through rehab stuff. Miles Michaelis is potentially on his way back. You're still without Jordan Hicks. And like you said, now this team is starting to hit. You know, coming into the game tonight, you know, you've got guys like Harrison Bader is batting over 270 right now. He's had, we were talking before we went on, he's batting like over 500 in the last week or so. That's just from Harrison Bader. Dylan Carlson last night had a couple of doubles and a home run. Paul Goldschmidt had a home run tonight. He's been batting very, very well. Nolan Arenado, home run last night. He's starting to kind of bounce back a little bit. Tyler O'Neill, I think probably the most forgotten guy right now, especially in that outfield. He's batting 271 coming into the next at bat. So this team, if it starts to hit and starts to roll a little bit, and you get these pitchers back that can go deeper into games, you could really do some damage. And it really does come down to, what do you do at the trade deadline? If you're within that 5-6 game range, what's the play? Do you go out there and find a bench bat? Do you go out there and find a bullpen piece? Do you go out for a starting pitcher? What is John Mozeliak going to have to target at the trade deadline for this team to really make a run?
You've got to go get a starting pitcher. You have to, whether it's Kyle Gibson or, you know, whether Jose Berrios, probably not the guy that's going to be available. I'm going to be real honest with you guys, and I've said for the last month it's not going to happen. You look at what's going on in the East. They made the announcement today that they're pretty much shutting down Steven Strasburg for the rest of the year. All of a sudden, if the Cardinals get within 4 or 5 games and the Nationals keep sliding, you know, there's more and more rumors that the Nationals are thinking about moving Max Scherzer. I mean, is it likely? No, but if the Cardinals are in that 5 or 6 game window and he's available, I think you've got to take a swing at it.
Is Max Scherzer and his contract and all that he brings more desirable to you than a Kyle Gibson, who does have an extra year of control with him?
Yeah, I mean, they're two totally different pitchers. I mean, Gibson's had a really good year, but let's be honest, he's not the ace. I mean, he's a guy who more often than not is going to be your 2 or 3 guy, and Scherzer's the guy who by himself could win a World Series for you. True. I don't know that Kyle Gibson can do that. True. So, I mean, that's the difference. But Gibson does have a lot of value because he has next year too. Although, I think if you make the Scherzer trade, I don't think Max Scherzer is going anywhere. I think he's a Cardinal to end his career.
Yeah, definitely. And not only that, but it's just, you know, I always kind of look at the, you know, just the aesthetic side of the things. I mean, you know, Kyle Gibson, good pitcher. I mean, he's had kind of a, you know, a career year this year at the age of 33, I think he is. But Max Scherzer is obviously, you know, he brings so much to him. He brings the pedigree. He brings the local angle. And quite frankly, you know, for the Cardinals, if you're the St. Louis Cardinals brass and you're worried about attendance this year and revenues, go get Scherzer and sell some jerseys. Because, I mean, who's not going to want a Max Scherzer jersey if you're a Cardinals fan?
If they were worried about attendance and they were worried about ticket sales and jersey sales, they would have made a call to a former Cardinal and brought him in any way they could see fit. But that's just my opinion on that one. By the way,
is not playing badly for Los Angeles.
No, that's a guy you don't want to see coming up to the plate in the playoffs against you this year.
Oh, well, at least we have Matt Carpenter and Jose Rondon.
Yes. Well, and speaking of Scherzer, you know, we've talked about the injuries. Do you really want to have a guy like Jack Flaherty, who is going to be your ace? Do you want him to come back and push himself to be that top of the rotation starter this year and maybe risk injuring himself again? Or would it be more prudent to have a Max Scherzer in here and say, look, this guy will be the ace this year? You work on getting yourself healthy and getting back up to full strength. We'll definitely use you, but you don't have that pressure on you. And it slots people down, just boom, 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 boom. I think it makes too much sense to not throw everything you can at it. And in that vein, you have to look at what the Cardinals have to offer. And this is something that was discussed on 101 a couple of days ago. But, you know, are there anybody on the Cardinals, anybody in the system really, that you would consider untouchable at this point to bring in any sort of player?
Yeah, I'm not trading Nolan Gorman or Matthew Liberatore, even for Max Scherzer. I'm not doing it. Those two guys are untouchable in my mind. The rest of them, you know, a Thompson Ibe move. You know, I put out a thing the other day that there was a rumor that he may be involved in a potential Kyle Gibson trade. You know, Zach Thompson Ibe moving. Herrera, you know, because he's supposed to be the heir apparent to Yachty, maybe you don't move him if you don't have to. But they've got three or four catchers in the system that are all pretty highly ranked. So, you know, it just comes down to it. You know, again, what is John Mozeliak going to be comfortable moving? You know, I mean, like I said, you've got to make a run for it. And as we're talking about, Giovanni Gallegos just gave up the lead. It's not tied anymore. It's 6-5 Reds at the bottom of the eighth.
One of the follow two relievers that Schilt mentioned the other night as guys that he can't trot out there every night. So, ugh.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. We talked about you need a Max Scherzer or something. You also need to go get another relief pitcher, probably. Although, if you do go get a guy like Scherzer and say Miles Michaelis comes back, then that helps it in a lot of ways, too, because you can put one of those other guys that's in your rotation now in the bullpen and kind of make that work. And you can mix and match stuff. But, I mean, ideally, you know, when you really look at this team, if you could do it, you know, it would be really nice if you could get a starter, at least a mid-level relief pitcher and a bench bat.
The only problem, though, is that this time of year with the deadline coming up, relievers are kind of at a premium. And you often, as a GM, pay a premium price for a reliever who might be having his only good year of his career this year. I mean, of course, baseball is always a what have you done for me lately. But it seems to me that in the past, you know, decade or so, it feels like the Cardinals have had good organizational depth, like in, you know, coming and they can find sometimes a pitcher within their organization to bail them out. It feels like that depth is gone this year, and they've had to go out and, you know, dumpster dive for, you know, LeBlanc and Garcia. I mean, do you think, you know, it's more than just, you know, having, you know, poor, you know, relievers this year? Do you think maybe there's a problem with the players that the front office is bringing into the organization?
I think it's more the fact that a lot of those higher level pitchers that would have been relief pitchers that you might have used have been used in trades in the last couple of years.
Sure.
And then some of the guys that were supposed to step up and fill those spots are a year behind because they didn't play a really organized ball in the minor leagues last year. So if last year was a normal year, you'd probably have Matthew Liberatore and Zach Thompson in your bullpen right now because they would have had that year in the minor leagues and they would have been ready, but everything kind of got pushed back in the minor league system a year, basically.
It's a good point.
Yeah. Very, very, very good point. And like you said, the Cardinals do just give up the lead. It's now 6-5 Reds, bottom of the eighth, two out, still two on. Gallegos facing Joey Votto, a guy that absolutely kills the Cardinals.
So what you're saying is the Cardinals cannot guard a lead like they do in Cleveland.
Oh boy. Yeah. We were going to get to that. So, honestly, I mean, you know, the shoe dropped at the Washington football team when they dropped their Redskins name. The Cleveland Indians were kind of right behind it, started researching that. I'm actually a little surprised that Cleveland was the team that actually came out with the new name first. But, yeah, earlier today it came out that Cleveland has decided that they're going to be changing their name to the Guardians, which does allow them to keep half their jersey because, you know, Indians, Guardians, you know, you at least get to save on some script, right? What do you guys think of this name? I get it. It's generic, but it still could rub people the wrong way.
It's just there's multiple problems here. Number one, they supposedly had over like 2,000 names that they were considering, you know, over the past couple of months. This is the one they come up with. So that's an issue. The other issue is, you know, this is they're called the Guardians, which implies, you know, on your heels, defensive. It does not give you the willies if you are, you know, going into Cleveland and you're going to take on the Guardians.
But the Guardians of the Galaxy, though. Come on.
But they're not the Guardians of the Galaxy. They're just Guardians with a weird winged logo. It just does not work. And by the way, they missed out on an opportunity. They should. Why couldn't they be Cleveland Rocks? You know, that would have been fun. You know, more fun than Guardians.
Yeah, you could have gotten Drew Carey involved.
Yeah,
and that was one of the names that made that list of the 2000. That was definitely on there. You know, I think most people that I for sure did thought they would go back to the original baseball team in Cleveland and be the Spiders. I was really shocked that that's not where they went.
Nothing wrong.
There was actually, if you didn't read the reports, there was actually a very, very strong anti-spider contingent, the brown recluse tribe, really kind of came out in a swarm and were very, very against putting out the spiders as a name that would, you know, maybe go down in infamy as being, it could give spiders a bad name. So, and if you don't know, I am absolutely screwing with you all.
Yeah, because I was going to say because you literally just used the word tribe to describe, you know, a group against a new name for the Indians. It's terrible.
I mean, you got to have fun with it, right?
But by the way, I do know people that are deathly afraid of spiders, which on one hand, okay, maybe you're offending them. But on the other hand, maybe there's baseball players that are deathly afraid of spiders, and that could give you a competitive advantage.
I know I would not want to play for the snakes because I am terrified of snakes.
No, I weep for anyone that plays with the Diamondbacks. Isn't that a type of snake?
It is. And yeah. Are you weeping for them because they're 35 games below 500? Or
No. I mean, they're doing enough weeping on their own over that fact. I mean, they might have like three actual major leaguers on their team. I went to like the getaway day game at Cardinals and Diamondbacks, and I was just like, my God, the Cardinals are just beating up on this AA team. It's sad.
Well, they have more jerseys than they do wins, don't they? Different jersey combinations?
At this point, which, by the way, you know, I think we can still celebrate that Goldschmidt trade because the assets that the Cardinals gave up to get Goldschmidt, they're not exactly helping Arizona dig out of this hole.
No, not really. And you know what's crazy is that Arizona has 15 different uniforms and none of them are good.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, at this point, just go back to the original teal and purples.
I'm fine with that. All right. Speaking of weeping, if you hear that cry in the distance, it's coming from the general direction of Texas and mainly Texas A&M, as they've been left out of conversations that would be bringing Oklahoma and Texas into the SEC. Now, the news about this kind of came out the other day, just really yesterday, and everybody's like, oh, well, this is news. Well, apparently they've actually been working on this for multiple weeks, 6 weeks to be exact. Texas A&M has not been a part of the process. And that's the shocking thing right there, that the SEC would exclude one of their teams from getting them to grow. Yeah, that would never happen in the SEC. But it looks like this is very, very close to happening. And as we're big Mizzou fans here, we got out of the Big 12 to, A, go to a better conference, and also to get away from Oklahoma because they had our number for so long. They beat us in recruiting and all of that stuff. But, you know, is this something that as a Mizzou fan you can sit there and go, okay, we've put our mark on the SEC. Now you're coming into our territory. You're going to be our whipping boy.
Well, not only that, but like, didn't Mizzou get away from the Big 12 because Texas and Oklahoma kind of had a stranglehold on like the finances of the Big 12? Like, it seemed like everything was kind of tilted in their favor. Nebraska left, I think, for similar reasons as well. So now you're talking about, you know, going to the SEC, where, you know, compared to the Big 12, I mean, it's a little bit more of an even playing field, you know, for those teams. Like, I mean, even Vanderbilt, you know, has, you know, a decent chance year in and year out to at least win a couple games. I find it's going to be something that's going to rankle a lot of teams in the SEC. Texas A&M, I wonder if they start looking at the ACC now just to, you know, get away from Texas again. I wonder if Mizzou starts kind of poking around the Big Ten again. This is a situation where, you know, they already ran from, you know, Texas and Oklahoma, and now they followed them into the SEC. It's going to be interesting to see the reaction out of Columbia for this.
Well, and it's just going to be really frustrating for Mizzou fans because, you know, you've built up this program the last couple of years. You've got these huge recruiting classes, and now you're bringing in Oklahoma and Texas to the SEC to make it that much more difficult for Mizzou. You know, in some of the mocks you've seen, Mizzou's going to be in the same division with Oklahoma and Texas. So, you know, it's not going to get any easier for the Tigers. And like you said, the thing that's really driving this, the reason the SEC is so excited about it, is part of what made the Big 12 such a mess at one point is the Longhorn TV network. That's what the SEC really wants to get their hands on.
Yeah, they certainly do. And it kind of leads me into this big question, because when this happened the first time around, when Texas A&M and Mizzou flipped and you had the Pac-10 growing to the Pac-12 and the Big 10 expanding as well, we thought that might have been the tipping point of this massive exodus where you end up having four regional conferences. Now you're seeing this with the Big 12. Kansas has been rumored to be starting to talk to the Big 10 now about coming into there. Are we getting to that point of no return where very, very soon, especially now with the NILs going out there, with people being able to make money off their likeness, you have to have big TV contracts, lots of money rolling in still. Are we this close to having that four-conference Super League that was kind of rumored when this all went down last time?
It's definitely getting closer. It's definitely getting closer, and I'm not sure that that's the best thing in the world for college athletics, but it's definitely something that you can see in the near future. And you talk about the Big Ten, Kansas would be great for the basketball program in the Big Ten. Can't imagine that they're excited about Kansas's football team coming there.
No, probably not. Kansas football has not been exciting really ever in my lifetime, except maybe for like 1 year. That's about it. But at least Nebraska wouldn't feel so lonely, because it's still, even though Nebraska's been a part of the Big Ten for so long, it's just still kind of weird to think of Nebraska and the Big Ten when they were such a stalwart in the Big Eight and then the Big 12 for so long. But also, wouldn't this be another case of Kansas ducking Mizzou?
Yeah.
I don't think that bridge has been fixed yet. I mean, Kansas got very butthurt when they moved out of the, when Mizzou moved out of the SEC, and now here's Kansas moving out. So now who's the hypocrite, when it comes to that sort of thing? So,
it's all about following the money, though. I mean, if Texas and Oklahoma leave the Big 12, Kansas isn't going to be the sole provider or the sole winner of all that. People aren't going to be spending tons of money to watch Kansas. Even if their basketball team continues to play well and the football team improves, they have to go and kind of hop on the lifeline of another big-time conference. Because I think if Texas and Oklahoma leave, that's the end of the Big 12. There's that entire conference would dissolve, and everybody will go everywhere, and that legacy will be gone.
I mean, they've apparently identified a couple teams that they could possibly bring in to replace Texas and Oklahoma. But let's face it, you're not replacing Texas and Oklahoma fully. I mean, you're going from the Big 12 to the mediocre 12, basically at this point. And it's just at that point, why bother? And that may be what Kansas is thinking, flirting with the Big 10.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be interesting to see if that happens then, because what happens to really good programs like Kansas State and Oklahoma State that are going to be scrambling, and Baylor that are going to be scrambling to find a conference then at that
probably
point?
Go out west, probably.
Yeah, I mean, think Baylor would probably be a great target for the Pac-12. I think they would probably welcome having them coming in. Oklahoma State, Oklahoma State might be another one that the Pac-12 looks at as well. Iowa State is another one that could be a big Ten target as well. If you get the Iowa State package as well, continue the rivalry there, and then you can have that essentially Big 12 West where you have Iowa State, Iowa, Kansas, Nebraska as part of all of that.
The Big Eight, and
yeah, there you go. The Big Eight in the Big Ten, which is now 20.
Because then you'd have Arkansas in there as well. They were
Arkansas is the SEC though.
Oh, we're different things. Got it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. I know what you're saying. But if Oklahoma and Texas move, what who's to say that the SEC doesn't say, all right, Baylor come this way as well, or maybe they say, okay, Iowa State, why don't you join us? Give us a little bit of northern reach into the Southeastern Conference, which I don't see that happening. But then, you do have the ability to kind of remold the Big 12 in your own conference. And I know we're getting real, real close to being able to bring on one of the Mizzou coaches. And it's going to be real interesting to ask him his thoughts on that. And maybe when we do talk to him, it'll be after this announcement's already been made. Coach Drinkwitz has made inroads in Texas and Oklahoma as far as recruiting is concerned. If there's ever a guy that would be able to turn this to his advantage, it would be him. Because now he can sit there and say, hey, look, Oklahoma and Texas want to come play in our conference. So why not come to us and show them what they were missing out when they didn't recruit you when they were in the Big 12? They had to come and play with the big boys, which is us now. He may be able to turn that around and be able to increase his amazing recruiting level already.
You would hope so. You would hope so. It's going to make it really tough, though, because those kids in Oklahoma and Texas that want to go or play to Mizzou because they want to play in the SEC, now they can do it for state schools. So that's going to make it a lot more difficult to recruit those states. And real quickly, I know we're talking about football. We have to jump back to baseball just for a second because we were talking about the Cardinals needing a bench bat. Here's a perfect example. Top of the ninth, down by a run, two outs. You know who's batting right now as a pinch hitter? Adam Wainwright, because you have nobody left on your bench.
Are you kidding me?
No.
If only there was a former Cardinals legend that they could have brought in to avoid situations like this.
No.
Good God, Cardinals.
No, we didn't need to because we had John Nagowski, and he was going to be really, oh, wait, no, he's in Pittsburgh trying to fight everybody in baseball every night.
We literally gave Nagowski away. That's how valued he was. Like, I don't think we got anything from him. We just said, here. That's basically it.
I think that's exactly the case.
I mean, there might have been a handshake involved. That's about it.
I think we got a McNugget Happy Meal.
but they forgot to put two of the McNuggets in there.
Well, the toy wasn't there either.
And then they forgot that they forgot to you asked for barbecue sauce, but then they didn't give you the barbecue sauce. So
the fries were lukewarm.
And then the toy in there is a choking hazard,
like the Cardinals,
like the Cardinals are this year. But
oh boy, we'll stay with you through this the remainder of this Wainwright at bat just to see if maybe some spark is there, and maybe he can knock a home run out in Cincinnati and tie this game up. Wouldn't that be something if Adam Wainwright's the guy that ties it up?
And it's over.
Ah, well, there we go. So Cardinals lose 6-5 in Cincinnati. Not the way you want to start that series off, but still have the opportunity to potentially win two more games. And it still wouldn't be a bad series win if that's the case.
No. I mean, you know, it's never easy to go, especially to a rival like Cincinnati, and sweep a series. So if you can win two out of three down there, that's good because you would leap from them in the division into second place. So that's going to be your goal this week anyway, is to do that. And then you hope that the White Sox can beat up on Milwaukee because that's where the Brewers are playing right now.
Yeah, and let's check a quick on that score. Well, I don't think that's going to happen because the Brewers are up 7-0 in the top of the eighth against the White Sox. So Cardinals will lose ground to the Brewers tonight, barring an epic collapse of their bullpen, which we've seen here in St. Louis is a possibility, but probably not going to happen there. Not a great start to the weekend here for the Cardinals. The Blues were able to get a decent draft pick. And I want to go back real quick to the draft. Mason, Blues fan reacts. Dallas with the biggest blown pick of the draft just a couple of minutes ago. They drafted Wyatt Johnston, who was projected to go 45th. They picked him in the at the 22nd pick. So, okay, Dallas, congratulations.
Well, I mean, they did trade down to get him, but I didn't realize that down meant going down to the bottom of the barrel to with your pick. I mean, that's pretty bad. I mean, he was like in the 50s, I think, for rankings for a lot of sites. And so if you were worried about the Blues Boldick pick being a little bit off the radar, at least you're not Dallas tonight.
Very true. And going back to Edmonton, they picked a center. So they picked another forward with that with the pick that they traded down from, which ended up being a goaltender that Minnesota picked, which is a goaltender that the Oilers probably could have used. And they didn't even go defense. They went center. So once again, if you're an Oilers fan, sorry.
Sorry, not sorry. I mean, it's the Oilers. They bring this on themselves.
That they do. Yeah. Well, Tom, I want to thank you for joining us tonight because, you were able to bring some insight into this blue situation, the big trade today for Buchnevich and the potential Tarasenko trade as well. The entry draft is continuing right now on the ESPN network. Cardinals lose 6-5. They play in Cincinnati again this weekend. Two more games Saturday and Sunday. Lots of great stuff going on. Make sure you keep it here on Toasted Tavern as we bring you all of the action in sports and really give you that Midwest twist, because it's not the East, it's not the West. We are Midwest, and we are proud of it. So
Midwest bias.
Hashtag it. Am I doing that right? I'm old, so.
It's like this. Hashtag it. That's literally how the kids do it. Hashtag it, bro.
Oh, is it? Is it? Okay. Well, there we go. Apparently, I'm young again. We'll see. All right. For Tom Franklin, Scott Tobin, I am Wags. Thank you guys for joining us. We'll see you on Monday when we have KMOX's Tom Ackerman on the show. Lots of great stuff to talk about with Mr. Ackerman. He's his first appearance on the Tavern, but we've had him on the past on another show, and he's been great for us.
A friend of the program, and I'm lucky to call him a coworker because I see him every single morning, and he is the most chipper and awake person at 4:30 in the morning that you will ever find. Scott, you know the struggle, man. I mean, it's hard to smile at that time of morning.
Yeah, it really is. So to be happy and chipper, you have to be a special person at 4:30 in the morning.
So Tom is definitely special. I mean, he is unlike anyone I've ever worked with.
Let me ask you this then. Does that chipperness, does it ever make you want to hit him in the morning? We're still alive. Remember that.
No, honestly, he's got a vibe to him that you can't hate the guy.
We're going to clip that off, and we will definitely use that on Monday just to keep you in good graces.
Or edit and say you can hate the guy and totally defame me and make my workplace environment hell on Tuesday. Thank you, guys.
I don't think we'd do that. All right. Well, guys, thank you again for joining us. We'll see you guys on Monday on the Toasted Tavern. Have a great weekend. Be safe out there and enjoy the Cardinals and the Olympics because those are going on as well. We will see you guys on Monday. Have a great rest of your night.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.